It Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. KY's Whitehead. So we are talking about whether or not Baltimore City, whether or not Maryland, whether or not the black community as a whole, whether or not America is ready for a revolution. What would it mean for us to draw a line in the sand, to say that we're not going to take it anymore, to say that we are demanding real change, just to kind of push back a little bit. Let me tell you why I'm asking this. Because in Texas, a young brother was out walking. And before I go into that, let me just make a note, because I want to tell you about tomorrow. I'm sorry, I didn't tell you that earlier, that tomorrow we have the next installment of our COVID vaccination hesitation conversation series. I know you still have questions. You can send them to Justina at justina.pollard, P-O-L-L-A-R-D, at morgan.edu. Justina.pollard at morgan.edu. Send in your questions and we will answer them in our COVID vaccination hesitation series. Additionally, I want to invite you to join my colleague, Faraji Muhammad, on For the Culture. Join him on February 28th. I believe that's Thursday, right, Justina? That's Thursday from 5 to 7 p.m. He's going to moderate community conversation with WEAA in Baltimore City Public Schools and with Dr. Sonia Santelices, talking about the reopening of Baltimore City schools, which is scheduled to take place on March 1st, which is, I believe, on Monday. So he'll have that conversation on Thursday. He wants to encourage all of you to give a call. I want to go now, as we're getting into our conversation about freedom and justice, to Senator Ben Cardin, who was first elected back in 2006, and he won re-election to a third term in 2018, taking 65% of the vote. He introduced S.2355 to end racial and religious profiling in 2019. Senator Cardin, how are you?
I'm just doing great. I hope you're well and safe. It's good to be on your show again.
Good to have you back. I know you're dashing to Washington, D.C., so thank you for making the time to tell us what's happening with this bill for racial and religious profiling.
Well, I'm hopeful that we will finally get this enacted into law so that no law enforcement agency, whether it's state, local, federal, auxiliary, would be able to use discriminatory profiling as part of their law enforcement strategy. It should have no place in today's policing. We saw the effects of this in tragedies that have occurred all throughout our nation. It's ineffective, it's costly, and it can be deadly. So this legislation is part of the Justice and Policing Act that was introduced last year. It's part of the plan of the Biden administration, and it's legislation that I've introduced now for several Congresses that would say that discriminatory racial and religious profiling cannot be done. The private action can be brought against any law enforcement agency that uses this so that we would finally get rid of this discriminatory practice and be able to set the seeds for the growth of community trust with law enforcement working together to keep our community safe.
Now, how does that play into, say, routine traffic stops or you know, pedestrian stops or frisk and other types of body searches? Will all those things then be removed off the table so we don't have to be concerned about those anymore?
You're absolutely right in pointing to where the problem exists. It's not discriminatory policing to use specific identifiers for a particular crime. That's perfectly acceptable, and that's what you would want law enforcement to do. But when law enforcement picks on a particular community and say, look, we're going to do more traffic stops here, or we're going to look for people of color to do traffic stops, or we're going to do our investigations in certain neighborhoods, rather than to do law enforcement, that causes mistrust, and rightly so. And we saw in the pattern and practice investigation after Freddie Gray in Baltimore that type of discriminatory activities in the Baltimore City Police Department led to violence, led to death, and led to communities being less safe rather than more safe.
And then my last question for you, Senator Cardin, before you dash to D.C., on the ground, it looks like things have changed in Washington, or so it seems to us on the outside. As someone on the inside, you know, has the climate, environment changed? Will it be easier to get things through like this type of act?
Well, let's be very clear. Just not having to deal with an administration that doesn't tell you the truth, that does very much discriminatory language in the way that they talk, encouraging racism. So getting Donald Trump out of Washington is a very positive step in and of itself. But now we have Joe Biden, and Joe Biden is a person who really is trying to bring our nation together, who's made a commitment to deal with racial justice and to deal with the discriminatory problems we have in our community. And he's shown that by his early appointments. He's shown that by the programs that he's submitting to Congress, by his executive actions. So, yes, things are different. But make no mistake about it. We are a nation that is divided. The Senate, although the Democrats control the gavel, it's 50-50 as far as membership in the Senate. We only have the gavel because of the vice president being a Democrat. And thank goodness we have Kamala Harris. So it's still a divided nation. It's still going to be difficult to enact permanent policies in this country. But we're much more optimistic, and we certainly have, as our leader in the White House, a person who is very much promotes these values by what he does, by his actions, and by his words.
Senator Ben Cardin, thank you so much. We look forward to success with the End Racial and Religious Profiling Act that you introduced in 2019 with that going forward. Thank you so much for your time, sir.
It's always a pleasure. Good talking to you.
Good talking to you as well. So, folks, we're talking about how we can transform this country and things like this particular act to end racial and religious profiling so that they just don't say we're looking for a black person, do some type of law and order SVU thing where they're stopping every black person regardless of size or shape as they're trying to track people down. We can end that. We don't have to think about driving while black being a crime anymore. We don't have to think about walking while black being a crime. I want to talk about that story about the young man who was out minding his business. Listen to this. Now, we know that Texas got a whole lot going on. I mean, Texas right now is truly trying to dig itself out. But in North Texas, a black teenager in Collin County was arrested for walking home on a street during the winter storm. Hear me when I tell you, he was walking home during a winter storm. He was stopped by the police, arrested, spent a night in jail. Now, the misdemeanor charge against him has been dropped. Police said they received a call about a black man. And, you know, they're just the same black man. Unfortunately, we know in America, when you say black man, you're talking about all black men and boys over the age of 13 up to the age of 99, right? Because we know that with racial profiling, they tend to age our children, right? They tend to age black boys 4 to 5 years, which is why they saw Tamir Rice, who was 12. They saw him as 20. They tend to age black girls anywhere from 5 to 7 years. So this black teenager, we're looking for a black man stumbling in the middle of a snowy street, only wearing a short sleeve shirt, and they were sent out to perform a welfare check. Now check me out when I hear this. This is the same check that the cops were sent on when the black woman, Tatiana Jefferson, remember this? She was sitting in a house playing video games with her nephew, and her door was open, and a neighbor, a black neighbor, who was trying to be helpful, called for a welfare check. Well, that's what they're supposed to do. Okay, let me just say, they're supposed to show up to check to make sure things are okay and provide support. Calling the cops for a welfare check should not end with the Tatiana Jefferson being shot and killed in her own home. It should not end with a teenager being arrested for walking. It should not end with a man from Starbucks getting arrested for sitting in Starbucks. It should not end with cops beating down a kid standing outside the Waffle House so he can stand outside of the and not be in the rain. It should not end with that. Like, a welfare check should not end with the type of things that it's ending with in this country. So they were looking for a black man stumbling around in the middle of a snowy street, only wearing a short sleeve shirt. Police released the body cam footage of the encounter on Friday. Put it out on Facebook, of course. In the video, you see the police are following Reese and they're repeatedly asking him, where is he going? He responds multiple times, I am fine. I am on my way home. He was walking home from his job at Walmart. He did not stop for the officers, he said, because he didn't need their help. He's walking home from his job. Officers continued to follow Reese for more than 2 minutes. So they were stalking him. They used the word following in the article. I'm saying, if you've been following me for 2 minutes, you're no longer following me. You're stalking me at this point, a la George Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin, right? They stopped him after following him for 2 minutes. Dude was just walking. They told him they were doing an investigation and informed him that he was being detained. Reese, 18 years old, said no. Which, by the way, we actually can say no to the police. All right, listen how radical that is. I want to detain you. No. I want to talk to you. No. I actually have the right to tell the cops no. And we've seen countless videos of people who are not black telling the cops no, and incredible restraint is shown. And we know that if it had been black folks on January 6th, we would have a different kind of demonstration happening in this country right now. So Reese kept walking. They stopped him again. And at that point, there's a scuffle where they're attempting to handcuff him, and you can hear him asking to be released. According to the Facebook post, the arresting officer noted that Reese resisted arrest, but they chose not to charge him. They then dropped the charge against him because the arrest wasn't consistent with why officers were called to investigate. According to the Plano police chief, what they should have done and what they have done in the past, take the person home. Instead, they arrested him, spent a night in jail, walking home from his job at Walmart. They said, you know, they don't believe that race was a factor. You don't know how people are thinking. They followed him for 2 minutes. After 2 minutes, they said, we want to detain you. He said, no. They must have gotten out of their car. I mean, you know what I'm saying? How else would a scuffle ensue with him being arrested, taken to jail, spending the night in jail? He was just walking in the snow on his way home from work. So when we talk about what it would look like to bring about the type of changes that we want to have, this is what we're talking about. This is what we mean when we say people in this country, we individually cannot be free until we collectively are free. It doesn't work that way. So how do we respond? How do we respond to situations like this that seem to continue? So you're walking in the snow. The cops follow you as you're walking in the snow. They want to detain you. Do you say yes or no? How are you teaching your children? When we talk about revolutionary teaching, we're talking about all of this too. We're talking about trying to transform the ways in which we are seen and treated by the police. We're trying to transform that. I think that we have reached a wall here. I think that we're at a point that we have to look at the changes, only because Texas is in the midst of a major situation right now. Texas is trying to dig itself out. So rather than focusing on that, we have something else happening. Let me remind you of what's happening in Texas. I have a clip from the Today Show. Let me play that as a reminder of exactly what Texas is dealing with and really what they should be focused on right now.
It's tough to fathom that a week ago today, we'd be standing in single digits and snow. Since then, Texas has experienced what could become the costliest weather event in its history, leaving millions desperate for help. The deep freeze in Texas is finally over, but millions statewide now dealing with the fallout.
I don't have water again after 4 days without it because of frozen pipes.
Thousands still without power, and more than 8 million people unable to drink their water.
You know, this whole boil thing sucks, especially when you got 4 kids and 3 dogs and 2 adults in a house.
Relief is pouring in. Gilbert Gomez able to get his hands on a few days' worth of water.
How are you feeling?
It's just devastating. You know, we shouldn't have to live like this, you know?
Over the weekend, President Biden signing a major disaster declaration, unlocking critical federal aid for hard-hit communities. Officials in the state now targeting outrageous energy bills. The governor announcing a temporary ban on cutting off power if a customer can't pay. Houston's mayor saying this to HODA on Sunday.
The consumer should not be made to pay the price for these exorbitant bills.
That's exactly what happened to Scott Willoughby, who signed up for wholesale prices, not knowing his rate could vary. So when the power supply went down, his bill took off.
When it was all said and done, what was the damage?
$16,798, something like that.
And this was not a bill. This was withdrawn.
This was withdrawn straight from my account.
By the time Willoughby could switch providers, he ended up paying 80 times more than his typical $200 bill. Some well-known Texans now pitching in to help. Beto O'Rourke driving a truck of water from El Paso to Austin. Senator Ted Cruz serving firefighters barbecue after flying back from Cancun. Even Houston-born Beyonce offering emergency funding on her website. Texans looking out for their own, even on South Padre Island, where all those cold-stunned sea turtles were warmed up enough to return to sea. Now, in addition to restoring power and water, there's the growing question.
So those are some of the things that Texas should be focused on, and not arresting teenagers for walking in the snow. But it's not just Texas, right? That part of what we're dealing with is trying to revolutionize how we're seen in this country. I am not sure if it can change. There was an article that we looked at that takes us right back to the beginning of this conversation. It's from Vox again. It's called Now is the Time to Revolutionize Policing. That we have to address police violence once and for all. Given the fact that last year in 2020, in the midst of a global pandemic, while everybody was shut in the house, unarmed black men, women, and children were still getting harassed and getting killed by the police. Like, it didn't go down last year, even though we were under the illusion that people were in the house. No, people were out, and here we are. So this article is calling for revolutionizing policing. This young girl, and I just gave you the Texas example. Here's an example from North Carolina. A little girl, 11 years old, said that she was on her front porch playing with her cousin and her sister. The police ran toward her house. She's out on the porch. She's 11. It was a huge gang of police officers with a police dog. And they ran up on the 3 girls out on the porch playing because they wondered if they were harboring young African-American boys that they were chasing. They thought they were harboring them. And according to Simpson, this little girl, she said a white officer pulled out a tube, pointed it at her, and it turns out it was pepper spray, spraying them with pepper spray. She said, and so here we are on our front porch, which is where we're supposed to be safe in our homes, and we weren't, you know. We were violated. 11 years old. These incidences happen quite frequently. It's all too common for black children in America. Remember in late January when a 9-year-old in Rochester, New York, she was having a mental health break, according to her mother, mental health crises. The police showed up. There was a welfare check. I've been talking about this. The police showed up and handcuffed a 9-year-old, pepper sprayed an 11-year-old, arrested an 18-year-old. And body cam footage is another one. And this happened last year in June, where a girl is seen crying, begging for her father because the police said to her that they were going to pepper spray her because she was out participating in a children's march in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement. It was all children. She's screaming and crying and saying, "Don't do it. Don't do it. Please stop. No." Because they told her they were going to pepper spray her. I have the clip from NBC News. Let's take a listen to what happened. This is just a reminder of when this 9-year-old was pepper sprayed.
Get in the car.
An emotional confrontation. Rochester police responding to a report of family trouble.
She got multicolored pants and a black hoodie. And mom's saying she's making suicidal statements.
Officers trying to convince a 9-year-old girl to get into a police car. An officer eventually gives the girl, already handcuffed, a warning before using pepper spray. Tonight, the girl's mother saying she will sue the city of Rochester and its police department.
I trusted the Rochester Police Department to do what they needed to do to help my daughter, not to abuse her or hurt her at all.
Here, just stop for a second.
I want my dad!
The police union says the girl resisted and kicked one of the officers and that they did not harm her when she would not comply. Authorities have said the girl had threatened to take her own life and harm her mother.
No one who would treat a 9-year-old child like that should be in law enforcement to help anyone.
City officials already have said the officers' actions were not appropriate. At least 3 have been disciplined. Now a lawsuit by a family claiming police used excessive force against their little girl.
It's a 9-year-old. I want to just remind you, we're talking about a 9-year-old little girl. 6 white officers showed up to subdue a 9-year-old girl. This article here and the Breathe Act is saying that the fear that black people have of the cops, it has to stop. Revolutionizing policing. We're going to talk more about that. Open up the phone lines to you, 410-319-8888, when we return. Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wiles-White here. We're talking about revolutionizing policing. We began this show with saying, is it time for a revolution? Should we have a revolution in this country? And maybe that was too radical for a lot of people. Okay. So maybe y'all not ready to overthrow America. Okay. Maybe y'all not ready to demand total change with equity and justice and fairness for black and brown folks in this country. Maybe we're not ready to tear down this capitalist, imperialist society and say that we need to make it so that everybody has a seat at the table. That some of us are not on the floor or up against the wall or in the back. Some of us aren't eating cake while the others are eating crumbs. Some of us aren't flying off to Cancun while others have their flooding and their pipes bursting, flooding everywhere. You know what? Maybe we're not ready for that. Okay. Why don't we start with this? Let's revolutionize policing. In January alone, it is now February 22nd, January alone, January of 2021. Hear me out here. And this article was just published February 22nd. Came out 8 a.m. this morning. In January, 70 people were killed by the police, according to the Washington Post, a number that February appears on track to match. Black people continue to be killed at a disproportionate rate. Of the people, of the police victims for whom race is known, at least 15 of those killed in January were black, which is about 20% for a community that only makes up 13.1 to 14% of the population. According to Mapping Police Violence, police killed 233 black people in 2020. Now, that was down from 277 in 2019, but higher than 2018. 410-319-8888. How about just revolutionizing policing? If we do that, maybe we can get to the rest of it. We have Kadria on the phone from Baltimore. Kadria, how are you?
Okay. I wanted to just really ask you if you know the meaning of the word revolution. I think that it means a turning, right? A turning. Turning, revolution, revolt, turn, right? So, yeah, I'm going to say this. You're not going to like it at all, but somebody told you this a couple of times. Nothing is won without a struggle. Struggle means bloodshed. If they're killing us, kill them back.
Okay, so I just want to say that there's nowhere in this show that Today with Dr. K is either promoting or calling for violence. I believe that revolutions can happen without that. I am not saying pick up arms and do any of that. That is not what we're calling for. And if you do that, you are not doing it on behest of our show. Nope, we are working for another way that we can have a revolution, which is finding a way to change society. Finding a way to do what they call a sharp change. Now, what Kadria is talking about, there's a revolution like a forcible overthrow of a government or social order in favor of a new system. She's saying it has to be bloodshed. But there's also another way we can look at revolution. Revolution, and the word is a Latin word, and it's related to the word revolutio, which means a turnaround. We are calling for a revolutio, the Latin version of the word revolution, which means a sharp change made to something. That's what we're talking about. Revolutions don't have to be, oh, we're throwing tea in the water and we're picking up and Christmas addicts goes down in blood. No, we can do a revolutio. A sharp change made to something. A turn around. Because it was an industrial revolution and that didn't involve bloodshed. Well, not a war anyway. So let's call it what it is. Thank you to Kadria. I'm calling for a revolutio, the Latin version of the word revolution, which means a sharp change made to something. It means a turnaround. Are you ready for that? Does that make you more uncomfortable? Rose Lane on Facebook Live said, look, race is always a factor. Folks always want to say it's not, but it is. Sharon said, I've been listening to you in the car till I arrived home. Awesome show as usual. Eric Williams said, you know, the police, they do it because they can. They can claim it wasn't race related, and folks sworn and civilians will support their claim and nothing will happen. Interesting, Jacqueline Thornton said, you know, per The Guardian, the 18-year-old was charged with being a pedestrian in the roadway. Hear me when I tell you, he was charged with walking in the street during a snowstorm. Yes, Jacqueline, what they're saying is you can't walk in the roadway when the sidewalks are icy and snow covered. You can be arrested and thrown in jail at 18 years old. Kim Fuller said, look, some of us won't survive and have not survived making it home from work, the playground, or out of our own homes to go to work just for being black. The revolution, revolutio, is how to survive and thrive while being black in America. What exactly does that look like? Can we survive and thrive in America? Here's a clip from ABC News of 16-year-old Taylor Bracey. This happened January 26th. She was slammed by a white resource officer in Florida. Let's take a listen to it.
Where that disturbing video showing a school resource officer throwing a high school student to the ground. The girl's mother saying that she wants that officer fired as she updates her daughter's condition. And ABC's Elwin Lopez joins us this morning with more. Elwin, good morning.
Well, good morning. The Florida deputy working as a school resource officer is on administrative leave, and we must warn our viewers, this video may be difficult to watch. Overnight, the mother of the Florida teen seen in this disturbing video speaking out, demanding justice.
It's an awful feeling like that, you know, sending your daughter to school and then something like this happened to your child.
In the video, you can hear a loud thud as 16-year-old Taylor Bracey is thrown onto a concrete walkway. The deputy who slammed her to the ground then seen placing her into handcuffs.
So yeah, so right now Taylor is having headaches, memory loss, blurred vision, problems sleeping. She's very depressed, and this experience is traumatic for everybody.
Authorities say the Osceola County deputy, identified as Ethan Fournier, was trying to stop a fight between the teen and another student. But Bracey's attorney says the use of force seen in the video was unnecessary.
These officers, per their department policies, are supposed to use minimum force necessary. Does that look like minimum force necessary?
A criminal investigation underway as investigators collect and comb through videos and statements from witnesses.
And it's not just that one video, and that's just a partial. That's why I'm not going to express any type of opinion on what may or may not have happened.
Liberty High School saying in part, it's been a difficult week for students and staff. And while the officer was not an employee at the school district, some parents are now pushing for more training.
We know that they're there for safety reasons, but they need to be trained on working with kids because kids are going to give you problems.
Taylor's mom says when she sent her daughter to school, this was the last thing she expected.
It's very traumatic to see my daughter, and not only Taylor, go through this, but my other kids as well, because it's all over, you know, social media, so they've seen it just as well. So it's hurtful to everybody. Justice to be served, you know, for my daughter.
The officer who has not been charged was also the girls' flag football coach at that high school. He will not be coaching while they investigate. Also important to point out that we did try to reach out to that officer for a comment, but we have not heard back yet. Dan.
It's over.
She was body slammed. 16 years old. You heard her mother, attorney Ben Crump. Her mother's name is Jamisha Bracey. Looked like she had a concussion. So policing has been a problem for centuries. And for some reason in this country, reforming policing has been very difficult. We talk about it. We talked about it after the Baltimore uprising. We have talked about it time and time again. And yet, it's a problem. Policing and terror have gone hand in hand. Now, listen to this. Policing actually comes from slave patrol, which were used to ensure that Black folks could not escape the cruel conditions or social and economic exploitation of slavery as a way of keeping enslaved people in line. You had what they called the slave patrols. After emancipation, targeted laws led to sentences enforced work gangs. So they started after slavery. So listen to me. During slavery, they had slave patrols to keep us in line. Get up, do your work, or you're going to be beat. Try to run away, we're going to catch you, and you're going to be beat. Look the wrong way, talk back, drop your head, act too uppity, you're going to be beat. That was during slavery. The slave patrols, the paddy rollers, kept enslaved Black men, women, and children in line. When American slavery ended, you had the rise of the mass industrial prison complex, and they were snatching Black folks up and putting them in jail, putting them into forced work gangs, essentially doing the work, the same work that enslaved people did. That way I don't have to pay any more money. I didn't pay anybody doing slavery. Now we have a work gang, have them come and do the work, and we're paying them, what, 5 cents an hour, if that much. Later, you had a nationwide campaign of lynchings and racial terror that went unchecked. We realize and recognize that when American slavery ended, two things happened, right? The rise of the mass industrial prison complex and the rise of white supremacy. See, in order to feel that you have to remain as the center, in order to fight against the rise of Black excellence, you saw the birth of white supremacy. Why else would you need to terrorize Black folks into not voting? Why else would you need to terrorize Black folks into not going to school? Why else would you do that unless you are afraid of Black excellence? That's all it could be, because they had nothing else. They had nothing else but their tenacious spirit, their brilliance in their minds. That's all they had, their talent, their time. They had no treasure. So what were you afraid of? Why burn down Wall Street if it wasn't because you were in fear of Black excellence? Why burn down Rosewood if it's not because of Black excellence? Why stalk and kill Fred Hampton while he's laying on his bed if it's not because of your fear of Black excellence? Remember that? If you haven't seen Judas and the Black Messiah, they go through and talk about COINTELPRO and saying, look, we need to stop a Messiah from rising that will unite not just all Black folks, but unite the people in this country that are most oppressed, which is those that are economically challenged across the board, despite race or ethnicity. This unchecked violence that we were talking about was sometimes participated in by police officers. This demands to end police brutality, to end the disproportionate detainment of Americans of color, and to end police killings have gone unheard. We've been talking about this for years. And it's not like people are not trying. Abolitionists argued against slave patrols. You had activists like W.B. Du Bois, activists and academics and intellectuals, Ida B. Wells, Angela Davis, DeRay McKesson is doing it most recently, calling for prison reform, for ending work gangs, for stopping mass lynchings of Black folks. Barbara Ransby deal with this work as well. Throughout the 20th century, all we've been doing is trying to get an end to police killings, very specifically, and police brutality more broadly. A new book just came out by Justin Fenton, again looking at the Gun Trace Task Force. Think about it. Here in Baltimore City, there was a gang of police officers running through the city unchecked, kicking in doors, stealing money, selling drugs, the Gun Trace Task Force. And I want to note that we, as a city, didn't respond by firing all police officers and saying, you know what, we're going to fire everyone and let's rehire the good ones. No, no, we just slapped the hands of those that got caught. And we moved on. We had a raging terrorist, domestic terrorist group running through Baltimore City with guns and badges, the GTTF, the Gun Trace Task Force. I call them domestic terrorists. They terrorized Black folks. They would run after young boys, kick in doors, drop down guns. I mean, they terrorized our children. They terrorized our brothers. They terrorized our fathers. And they went largely unchecked here in Baltimore City. It's like a don't ask, don't tell going on. Calling in vain to end police killings, more specifically, and police brutality more broadly. Think of all the police officers who participated in the very public social media killings that have populated and dominated our timelines from Facebook to Twitter since we started talking about Black Lives Matter. Many of them did not even get indicted. We indicted officers here who were not found guilty. They were indicted, but yeah, we know indictment is not enough. Indictment does not mean justice. Indictments are just the first step to trying to get to justice. The Gun Trace Task Force, and I want to be clear, because people think I'm just talking about race. No, no, I'm not. I mean, I do believe, as my husband just pointed out, hey, maybe there are four races I want to look at, Justina. Maybe it's Black folks, white folks, brown folks, and blue folks, right? Because we had Gun Trace Task Force members who were Black. It had nothing to do with, oh, I'm Black, I'm not going to do this. No, no, it was running this domestic terrorist operation out of Baltimore City that went unchecked. When we call for an end to policing, the problem is that on the continuum of the control in this country, prison labor is needed. In order to keep the multi-billion dollar industry rolling through, we need to have some reform. And people aren't willing to do that. People are not willing to do this work. Prison labor remains a problem. Lynching is still not a federal crime, although they have been working on this. We know this is the work that Kamala Harris, when she was a senator, and Cory Booker have been trying to get past. And we're trying to make lynching still lynching. We're trying to still get that to be a federal crime. And it's not yet. We're trying to find a way to revolutionize policing. So what do you think it would look like? 410-319-8888. Do you think we should revolutionize policing? Do you think it's time for us to say enough with where we're going? Enough with how we've been treated? Do you think it's time for us, I'm talking about adults here, that we should stop? Haley on Facebook Live said police in any capacity should not be in schools. All it does is feed the school the prison pipeline. Well, we have police officers. We call them what? Baltimore City School Resource Officers. They're cops. They have cops in school. A child's misbehaving in school, eighth grade, ninth grade, third period. Cops show up. We saw the video. And this came out a couple years ago of the cop coming into the classroom with the African-American sister misbehaving, according to the teacher anyway. And the cop flips her over in the desk. Remember that video? It's like, okay, why is the cop there for classroom management? I used to be a teacher here in Baltimore City, and we had cops in the school. I taught at West Baltimore Middle School back in 2006. We had cops in the school. When my students were misbehaving, I said, you know, I got to handle this myself. I cannot sit here and call the cops that are downstairs for classroom management. Because what else feeds the school to prison pipeline? According to Dr. Lawrence Brown, look, he said it's not just a school to prison pipeline. He argues that it's environmental injustice. The toxicity in our water, in our soil, in the air, that then in so many ways impacts the body of young people. Lead poisoning leads to aggressiveness, lack of impulse control. Lead poisoning. So if you're talking about a lack of impulse control, you no longer have the cognitive development to say, you know what, I shouldn't respond in this way. Our children here in Baltimore City, see, this is the work that State Senator Jill Picard has been talking about. Lead poisoning, that's that poison prison pipeline. Let's go to Natanya calling, 410-319-8888. Natanya, how are you?
I'm good, Dr. K. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for calling.
Ooh, I tell you, here we go again. From your lips to our ears. Mm. Ooh, thank you. Wow. I work in the system. You know, I work in the system, and I see it. I see it. It's just a nonstop. Mm. It's a nonstop, and when I say that, they're not held accountable. The kids aren't held accountable. Because, again, like you say, if you already got issues going on, how you going to be held accountable for the things that you do? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we can't hold them accountable inside those four walls. But guess what? When they get out here on the street,
yep,
it's totally different. Yeah. From, yeah. Oh, my gosh. School is a pipeline to jail. And I see it every day. I had a young man go in my work bag and steal my truck key, took it. The next day, I went back to work. I took the fare, didn't think that it would happen. And everybody from the head on down knew that this young man took my key. When I saw my vehicle again, totaled. He graduated and moved on.
Wow.
Nothing. Wow. Was not held accountable at all.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow, that's rough. And see, that's the other side of it, right? So we're trying to find ways to bend our heart without having to call the cops. But some of the behavior, why? Lack of impulse control. This lead poisoning, I think, we got to talk about that, Natanya. Yep. We got to talk about how it's impacting our children.
Because you know what? It is alive. It is alive and well, and people, they act like they don't see it. Even the parents act, I'm telling you, it is heavy. And when there's children that look like myself, you know, when the parents come, if they come cussing you out, then you already know.
Ooh, man. I know.
What's going on? It's in the home. You know, one thing I always say about my daughters, you know, I demand respect, not only from you, but when you go to school and you look at that teacher and she looks like your mama, don't you go in there, Colonel.
Yes.
Don't you go in there, Colonel. You going to leave Brown and then you go disrespect Brown? Brown got a problem. And that's me, the big Brown.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you. We have Pam on the phone. Pam, how are you? Then I'll go to Simon.
Hi, Dr. K. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for calling.
I was just about to say the same thing the young lady said. I was going to ask you, what do you recommend? Now, I do think that these police officers they're not needed in school. But when we talk about kids that have mental health issues, that's a whole different ball game. And people have to be trained in how to deal with them and to release that anger, even the parents. And I'm just curious as to why some of these parents called the police. Because if your kid does have challenges, emotional and behavior challenges, usually you have a team and someone that you can contact. But I have watched it in school where a kid would not move. The principal came out and asked him to come in. The vice principal, this kid was not moving. Their last resort was to call the police. I've even seen them call the parents and ask them to please come up here to help out. Yeah. I've had kids, and this is both white and black kids, get out the classroom and just run. And I literally had to jump the kids up in the class because I was stubborn and say, come on, get in line, grab the walkie-talkie. So while we're steadily following behind this kid, I'm on the walkie-talkie, and then the behavior specialist, you know, is also looking for the kid. Because you're responsible for their well-being in the school.
Yes, you are.
And sometimes they are not getting the help. So I do think kids with that have these challenges, it's a whole different ball game with them. And I actually went to a few programs, and you have to calm them down. You have to let them feel comfortable. But the police officers, if they're not trained on how to deal with kids and how to question them, then they do not belong in the school system. So I do believe that they do need training. But I have also been a witness to, it's a joke that goes through Baltimore County. And they always say that, you know, black kids don't have privilege. But there are many black kids that have smacked plenty of white teachers' faces, and they come back the next day and sit right in their classroom.
Oh, come on.
And you know what?
And
I told someone, I said, it is a really tough area because I don't know why they had to undo the school system. Have you ever been to any of the alternative schools? They are set up awesomely. You have one up in White Marsh, one down there in Catonsville, and they have like maybe 10 kids. And in the group of kids, they have a teacher and they have a psychologist right there. And then you have an aide in the classroom to take care of their needs. And I don't know why they don't do more training and they don't have more of these resources teachers in the school system. And for a while, I know a couple years ago, they had the males as, you know, behavior specialists also, because sometimes males need other males to talk to.
Right.
But I think they really do need to overhaul. They need to audit it. And as far as behavior issues, that's a whole different ballgame. But I think the kids that have emotional behavior issues, it's just so hard because some of them, I'm telling you, Dr. K, when they get enraged, they're almost like dealing with like a grown adult.
Yeah.
Trying to,
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
you know, try to hold them down. Because, like I said, I went to class years ago on how to hold them down and to keep them calm. But sometimes they're raging so much, they're even dragging you with them.
Oh, yeah. If they're big enough, I got to stop you there. Thank you so much, Pam. It goes back, folks. I mean, it is all connected. I'm asking you this. There's a reason why I'm talking about this. Because, you know, school starts on Monday in the midst of a global pandemic. Are we going to have cops in the school? Okay. You know, let me go to Simon. Simon, what do you think?
Hey. Well, you know, I think it's a very complicated issue. We do need police, and we need good police. All police are not evil. Many of them are. But the police, we talk about our children, but let me tell you, I know because I work with them, some of them are dangerous, and they're not all emotionally or mentally disabled either. Some of them are smart enough to know. And one of them told me to my face, I do it because I can, and you can't do nothing about it.
Wow.
You know, like the police didn't shoot my son. My son was shot by one of our children, and he didn't get caught. So how many more of our children did that child shoot? You know, it's a complicated issue, and we do need, like I said, we need police, and we need good ones. And we need to break the police culture, the code of silence, and not holding themselves accountable.
All right, I got to stop you there, Simon. Look, y'all, why don't we make a decision? Why don't we meet back here tomorrow at 3? Let's make a plan to have another conversation that matters. We are in the midst of 28 days of Black excellence. We are having difficult conversations about what it means to be Black and how do we go forward in this nation and make substantial changes once and for all. Keep it here for the Culture with Faraji Muhammad. It's been an honor and a privilege to serve you in this way.